good morning, Kansas City, and welcome to Central Standard Friday. This is Russ Simmons, and since I'm sitting here in the host chair, that means it's movie day here on Central Standard Friday. Of course, it's a very, very sad day in the movie world today. We're, of course, mourning the loss of 12 people who apparently, as NPR is reporting, have been killed in a shooting spree at an Aurora, Colorado theater where they were screening The Dark Knight Rises. And, of course, that puts a pall over everything surrounding the movie and, of course, something that we all are very concerned about. So our thoughts and prayers go out to all those people in Aurora, Colorado. I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI-FM, and we're joined today by...
Good morning. It's Marie Asner with Metro Voice News, phantomtollbooth.org, and onairprep.com.
And Tom Poe. I'm current chair of the Department of Communication Studies and professor of film and media arts at UMKC.
And, of course, we'll be talking about a number of movies that have opened up over the last month or so. So we would definitely like you to chime in. So if there's a movie that you'd like to know more about, or if you'd like to share your thoughts on the movie, we'd definitely want to hear from you. Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or you can send us a note at centralstandard@kcur.org. And we definitely want to hear from you, particularly if you're one of those people who attended one of those midnight or later screenings of The Dark Knight. Of course, it's has done huge numbers. People have been lining up for days to get tickets to see The Dark Knight Rises at theaters around town, and it's my understanding that the attendance has been very high. So we'd like to hear from you. Chime in and let us know what you thought of The Dark Knight Rises. And it's really a sad situation, of course, in so many ways, but this is a really, really good movie, but it is dark. And I think that we probably, as Tom was mentioning earlier when we were talking, maybe can't review it perhaps in the same way we would have before this tragedy arose. But it is the third and final chapter in director Christopher Nolan's Batman trilogy, and it deals with the duality of human nature, the good and bad in everyone. That includes Batman as well as the villains that he is up against. He has to battle his own demons in order to be able to battle the bad guys and ultimately save Gotham from nuclear disaster. It's a beautifully produced movie. 2 hours and 45 minutes. This is it's a lengthy movie, but boy, the pace is strong. The direction is terrific. The visuals are great, particularly in IMAX. I think this is one of the few movies that I can say without equivocation that, hey, go ahead and pop for the extra few bucks for the IMAX version. You won't be sorry because the visuals are great. And the acting is terrific. Tom Hardy is terrific as Bane, the anarchist who is going to annihilate Gotham. Anne Hathaway does a nice job as Catwoman. She's very alluring, and if it weren't for her, you wouldn't see some of the changes that the character Batman undergoes, which are very, very interesting. This is much more complex than a comic book movie has any right to be. Smart, well-written, particularly well-filmed. It's, to my way of thinking, it's the best mainstream Hollywood movie of the year so far. Would you guys agree with that?
I'm teetering on the brink about that. That's a possibility.
What did you think about it, Marie?
Okay. I agree with you, Russ. The main characters of The Dark Knight Rising all wear masks, some of them out of necessity and some because they can't face their former lives. And so taking the mask off is difficult. It's like peeling a personality away layer by layer. So Christian Bale, yes, he inhabits the role of the Dark Knight quite well. From frustration to fear, and even with a mask, you can tell what's going on with his eyes. His eyes do a lot of acting. Tom Hardy's Bane, and the one bone of contention I have is that I could not understand most of the dialogue. And when he does Spock, it sounds like Winston Churchill. And I figure, if you're going to have a villain, please let us hear what he has to say. Anne Hathaway's Catwoman is sarcastic, and that is a protection for her character as the plot goes along. She's in a tight situation, and she throws out a sarcastic remark, and it kind of off-puts everybody, and then she goes in with her martial arts skills and so on. But I like the interplay between Gary Oldman's Police Commissioner Gordon and Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who is a new character in this film, in the Batman series, called John Blake. Here's an older cop who's ashamed of his past in some respects, and a new young cop who sees police work as a mask to hide his own true feelings, and he gives a bit of his history there. And they're given very good dialogue, as is Michael Caine as Alfred the Loyal Butler, who dares to show his feelings in a very good Michael Caine scene. There's also humor in unexpected places with a side quip that's appropriate to the scene, and I'm referencing a congressman who's taken with Selena Kyle. Alfred's droll take on life at Wayne Manor, and one never really retires from anything, as Batman is trying to do at the beginning of the film. You can't enjoy your morning tea because something might just happen. The three Christopher Nolan Dark Knight films, I think, depicted the creation of Batman, his meeting of a deranged Joker in the second film that really brought acting to the forefront, and now a gathering of purpose. And Batman, I think, came about because of crime, but in Dark Knight Rises, crime so cripples everybody that out of the ashes comes something new. And this is what Bane wanted, was something new, but there can be differences in newness, one with fear or one with fortitude and clear vision. And dare I go out on a limb and say that this movie even has a little bit of love for a family that's not yours, for somebody who even befriended you a long time ago, and for a city. And I'm going to give it 4 stars.
Tom?
I've been thinking a lot about this film since I saw it and have some real mixed emotions. First off, the Batman series that Christopher Nolan has created is one of the great series, I think, in contemporary film history. So there's no question in my mind that this is a terrifically good motion picture. And I did find that it is a very fitting and I found emotionally satisfying conclusion to the trilogy. This is a great film that I'm not sure is a totally good film. I don't think it is as good as The Dark Knight. I think that the second, the tentpole, if you will, is by far the most satisfying. My question, and it was one before this morning's news, is does The Dark Knight, granted it's always been, its source material much darker than, say, a Marvel comic book tradition would be, but has it finally just gotten to be too dark, too mythic, that it's Batman, is Hamlet in a bat suit? And it may be, I think, just perhaps taking itself too seriously, that it takes the Batman myth and is creating a generation that's taking this as seriously as the Bible or the Quran. And I think that that is a bit disturbing to the degree that pop culture is becoming to be something where we can't even separate reality from, in fact, what is a comic book after all. I think that its darkness ends up creating a kind of schizophrenic film. Anne Hathaway, who I thought Catwoman was really good, does seem to be having fun. And so there's something that is off, I think, in such a dark movie where everyone else thinks that they are in Shakespeare. I think the chemistry between Christian Bale and Anne Hathaway works and all their scenes work. She just seems to be in a different movie. The other big problem I had is with the arch-villain being Bane, who is the signifier of chaos and brute force. But, you know, I think you need a super villain that, in fact, has some kind of clear motivation, some kind of personality. And I do think that the get-up of the mask, the sound, one of my thoughts was that maybe Christian Bale put it in his contract that his last supervillain, in fact, could not have much of a personality or be clearly heard, so that, unlike in the second one, Heath Ledger couldn't steal the movie from him. I'm going to go ahead and give it 4 stars, but with some serious reservations.
I'm going to give it 5 because I do think it's the best mainstream Hollywood film of the year. And I think that the interesting aspect of it is that in the villains as well as the hero, you see their transition and that you get enough background to understand why they're either good or bad. And what will come out in that individual. And I think that's what gives this movie a little extra edge and makes it that much better than your average Hollywood movie, but most of the movies that we see, period. And so I'm going to go ahead and give it a 5 with 2 fours and a 5. Shall we say 4.5, Marie?
Yes, and we had talked about this before the program started. I don't go to movies to sit and pick out errors or mistakes or anything like that, but I was watching along and I thought I saw a wardrobe tag on Joseph Gordon-Levitt's coat, a police coat at one time, that had his real name on it, not his name of John Blake, and then it was gone. So maybe somebody else.
Just something
else,
to look for.
Yeah, something to look for.
I'm glad you brought up Joseph Gordon-Levitt because I really liked him in this film
as
the Batman stand-in, fortunately, without having to wear a crazy suit.
And he's got a great science fiction film coming up later this summer called Looper. So if this guy's going in for action, you know, the door's open.
Join in the conversation by calling us at 816-235-2888 or send us an email to centralstandard@kcur.org. I know there were a lot of screenings of The Dark Knight over the since midnight, so I know a lot of people have seen it. If you have seen it, we would definitely want to hear from you. Give us a call and let us know what you thought or send us a note. One of the theaters it's playing at is the new Alamo Draft House, formerly the Main Street Theater downtown at 12th and Main. I know that a number of people have been asking me about the Alamo Draft House. And so have you been? Maybe you can give us a call and let us know what you think about this new addition to Kansas City's movie scene. Just give us a call or send us a note. Once again, it's 816-235-2888. Let's kind of shift gears and go for something completely very much lighter than The Dark Knight, and that is a raunchy comedy called Ted. Tom?
Ted starts off in the 1960s where a little boy on Christmas Eve gets a teddy bear that he greatly sort of loves and makes a wish that it could become a real, live teddy bear. So it's Pinocchio with a modern cynical twist that I think is a great concept because the teddy bear becomes a television celebrity and goes on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. But just like with all young celebrities, as is oftentimes the case, by the time we really get into the storyline, his fame and fortune has been forgotten. He's a has-been teddy bear already, and he's become a total slouch, druggy, and he and his now mid-30 boy have ended up becoming basic stoners. So that's where the raunch comes in. And I think the audience was having a great deal of fun with a teddy bear being so obscene and crude and rude. I think it was really funny for the first two-thirds. Then I think it falls apart when it goes into basic standard action-adventure land. It's really fun, though. It's got an incredible number of pop culture references, which add to its smartness. So it's written by stars Mark Wahlberg, and is written, and the teddy bear is voiced by Seth MacFarlane, who I think the comedy can all be given to his credit. So I don't know. I'm going to give it 2.5 stars. I would like to give it 3, but the last third just, I think it falls apart.
Marie?
I agree with Tom on this, and there's it deserves the R rating. There's a great deal of profanity, and there's a lot of patter. Seth MacFarlane voices Ted, and he goes along, and he's got some little vignettes of life in there, laced with the profanity, and you really have to listen to catch all of these things. It's cleverly done in the aspect that the teddy bear can do anything that a human can do, and there's concise views of life, and especially the one about Ted decides that he has to get a job, and the worst things that he can say to the person in charge of the meeting, the better the job is. So, worst language he uses, he doesn't want the job, and all of a sudden, you're assistant manager and you're promoted to manager and so on. I thought that was very good. But there was an article in the newspapers the past week about how many children are coming with their parents in the audience to see Ted. And I was wondering what people thought about this, because at the screening that I was at, it was adults. It was an afternoon matinee. But would you bring your child to a film with an R rating where the teddy bear is the object of profanity here? That makes one question that. There's a brilliant move in here also to have the childhood hero of Sam Jones in the film. But I was wondering, Buster Crabbe, I think, has passed away. He was also part of Flash Gordon. And Ron Ely as Tarzan probably is not doing things, personal appearances anyway. And I thought the Sam Jones bit was quite good. I'm going to give it 2.5 stars.
Speaking of Sam Jones, this is going to do great for the DVD sales of that old Flash Gordon film, which was one of my guilty pleasures when it first came out.
Yeah, this movie, as you said, is exceptionally raunchy. There's a lot of casual drug use as well as a lot of sexual talk. and innuendo. And I think that, you know, all the hard partying, I think it's something parents should know. So I think you're right to forewarn them, Marie. It's wrong in oh so many ways, but it's also very, very funny. So I'm going to give it a 3.5. Since it just it made me laugh and made me ashamed of myself, and I felt as I was walking out that I have no reason to like this movie as much as I did, particularly since it's so offensive and had such objectionable material. But it is a very funny movie. But I do agree with Tom that it does run out of steam. So I think we should average it out to a 3 between the three of us. Is that agreeable? Okay, so that's a 3 for Ted, which definitely earns its R rating. We have on the line Stephen from Kansas City, who managed to make one of the Dark Knight midnight screenings. Hi, Stephen. Welcome aboard.
Hi, thanks.
What did you think of the movie?
Well, I loved the film. I did the whole marathon, so I just saw
three
of them last night. But one of the things that I really appreciated about this one, as opposed to the second one, was he kind of went back to a comic book route, almost. You know, the first movie is loosely based off Frank Miller's Dark Knight, and this one was loosely based off the No Man's Land series. And I appreciated everything that he did to kind of throw back a little bit to the comic book fans on his last film.
And you said you sat through all three. Did you find that sitting there for so many hours at a time affected your take on the movie at all?
I noticed certain things that I hadn't seen, I guess, between the films before.
Yeah, such as?
Because I'd never watched them all in one go.
Uh-huh.
One of the things that we all kind of commented on, my friends and I, was just that he really loves to throw Batman off of something and crush a car. It happened in every film.
Yeah. Yeah, that's always fun. It's always good to see a car get crushed. That's what we go for.
Yeah. But it was a lot of fun to see all three in one go, to have the whole trilogy. But it was definitely good to have about half an hour in between each film to get up and walk around, too.
And would you give it out of 5 stars? How many would you give it?
I would have to give it, I think, 4.5, because there are a few plot holes that kind of make you question a few things. But overall, and it may just be that I've seen it the least of all the series now, but overall, it's definitely going to be my favorite.
All right, Stephen, thank you so much for your call.
Thanks.
And if you've seen The Dark Knight or any of the other movies that we'll be talking about, just go ahead and give us a call at 816-235-2888. Or send us a note at centralstandard@kcur.org. We have Stacy, who wrote in and said, I went to the Main Street Theater last night in the Power and Light District. That's also known as the Alamo Draft House now. Didn't see Batman because I can't stay up that late. But I saw Spider-Man. Really enjoyed the storyline. However, I wanted to say how much I enjoyed the theater. I really appreciate how they've have this strict no talking or texting policy. And, of course, all my favorite Boulevard beers on the menu. Also, they upgraded the dining menu, and it was delicious. And so, have you been to the Alamo Draft House? Have you been to see Spider-Man? Give us a call and let us know. And speaking of Spider-Man, let's talk about that, since that's the other huge box office hit that's a comic book character. Spider-Man, the Amazing Spider-Man, which goes back to the beginning of the story.
Well, unfortunately, with The Dark Knight Rises, our poor Spider-Man might get stomped in a corner or something. But I found this was a satisfactory film, and what they're doing is going back to the very beginning with a different take. And I saw this in 3D, and I would kind of recommend this in 3D as far as the special effects and so on. It really puts you in the action. We have Andrew Garfield now in the role of Peter Parker and Spider-Man, and he's a tall, gangly, thin guy who is probably 10 years older than the age he portrays, but you can really go by that because he acts like a teenager. And then we have the accident. He's a brilliant boy, I should put it this way. And at the very beginning of the film, we see that he has to live with his aunt and uncle because the parents are gone. And he becomes part of an advanced science project, and that's where he goes into the company that is sponsoring this and is bitten by the spider, and then we take off from there. And his girlfriend is Emma Stone, and I liked her much better than the other...
Kristen Dunst?
Yes, Kristen Dunst. There was something about Kristen that I didn't really see in all the roles that she did, but I like this combination. The lizard, why do we need a lizard as a villain? I mean, this is like from Star Trek's Gorn. We don't need that. You know, swishing the tail around, you cut it off, and there's another tail, you know, so we go along with that. I thought a different type villain would have been better. Special effects are wonderful, especially one where there's a car hanging off a bridge. There's a lot of tenderness in here and a lot of guilt in here, but there are different characterizations than there are in the first three films, so it kind of stands out by itself. This is a Spider-Man who becomes a creature because of an accident, not because of a deliberate bat cave or a magic hammer or an avoidance of kryptonite or anything like that, although I'm still waiting for the Plastic Man to make his movie. But I did like Spider-Man, The Amazing Spider-Man, and I'm going to give it 3.5 stars.
Tom?
Well, I like Dark Knight Rises, but had some qualms. I'm really enthusiastic about The Amazing Spider-Man. Oh, I know true Spidey aficionados were kind of disturbed that it was too soon to trample on the blessed memory of Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man. So it may not be a necessary remake so early on. However, this is Andrew Garfield's show, and I think he makes absolutely the most of it. Tobey Maguire was kind of a fuzzy-wuzzy Peter Parker. but here, he's reinterpreted by Garfield as a very recognizably confused teenager. And I think that it makes, in fact, his character really very human, easy to identify with. I'm going to quote another critic because it was one of the best lines I read in a long, long time in a movie review, and it came from The New Yorker that was talking about Garfield's Peter Parker. And says, "Well, this is a poor high school kid whose best friend is a skateboard." Which is a step up from Mark Zuckerberg.
Wow.
I think the chemistry between Garfield and Emma Stone is strong. I have a problem with Emma Stone's character, who I think is just way too savvy and smart for a high school girl.
Yes.
How has she got this high-powered sort of permission to roam around one of the most top-secret sort of labs? So I think that falls through. I'm with Marie about, I think, the lizard business. Those places that weren't all that interesting. But, boy, I like Sally Fields a lot in her role. Mm-hmm. I think all the acting is really good. But Garfield is the reason to go see this movie, and I'm going to give it 4 stars.
Wow. Well, I didn't like it nearly as well as either of you. I think that it's just the word amazing is not right for this movie. I think the acceptable Spider-Man, the average Spider-Man might have been a better title, because even though I would agree that the visual effects are pretty amazing, that the movie looks great up on the big screen, there, from a dramatic standpoint, this movie just didn't need to be made. I mean, yes, we recently had, less than 10 years ago, the Tobey Maguire version. Do we really need this remake all of a sudden? Oh, it's okay. It's perfectly acceptable, but there's nothing exceptional in the filmmaking. You know, the guy that made this movie, Mark Webb, made the terrific romantic comedy called 500 Days of Summer. So when I went to see this, I thought, great, he's going to bring something fresh and new, and he didn't. He brought the same old thing. So I'm only going to I'll give it a 3 because I do think that the visuals are great. But you guys both gave it a 3.5 and a 4, so shall we average it out to 3.5? For the amazing or not so amazing Spider-Man, and it's rated PG-13, by the way, so it is good for the whole family. And before we take a break, let's quickly talk about another family film. I know Marie saw it for us. It's called Ice Age: Continental Drift.
Yes, this is kind of an educational film, actually, and so in my review of it, I said it's better for kids over the age of 8 because they do talk about the Teutonic plates around the earth shifting, and even though the story about the shifting is told by Scrat, our favorite squirrel who's always chasing that acorn, still it could be part of a science project. And so you take that third of the movie out, and then you actually have our favorite characters. And because the plates are shifting, they're losing their home, they have to find another place, and there's this evacuation, and the ice glaciers are melting, and so on. And then, right in the middle of the movie, we come up with a villain, and it's a monkey, shades of Johnny Depp in Pirates of the Caribbean, but this guy has an ice floe that just happens to be shaped like a pirate ship, and he's floating the seas, and our favorite people get caught up with him. I would have preferred a different villain. I think we're all anti-villain here today. We would have preferred somebody else. Peter Dinklage voices the villain, and he, you know, it's a large monkey, and he really goes with that voice, you know. But the character was just not part of this movie. It's about adolescence and family values, taking care of grandma, and then grandma is tags along with everybody, and she's supposed to be this doddering old lady who has a pet she keeps looking for. Where's Precious? But, boy, she knows something that nobody else knows, and that's a nice little secret in here is that exactly who Precious is. So I'm going to go ahead and give it 3 stars. And the voiceovers, of course, are wonderful. Animation is great.
I'm usually not one for quoting other critics, but our colleague Dan Leibarger had a nice quip. He posts online criticisms in haiku, and his haiku criticism of Ice Age was, "Ice Age continental drift is as fresh as a dinosaur egg." So thanks, Dan, for that. I appreciate it. We're going to be talking about a lot more movies that have opened over the last month after the break. So be sure and give us a call at 816-235-2888 to chime in, or send us a note at centralstandard@kcur.org. We'll also have some announcements for you, some current goings-on in the local movie world, and that's coming up after this break. And welcome back to Central Standard Friday. It's movie day here on the show, and I'm Russ Simmons, and I'm joined by Marie Asner and Tom Poe, and we're talking about movies that have opened up over the last few weeks in the KC area. We'd certainly like to hear from you as well. If you've seen The Dark Knight, or perhaps if you've attended the new Alamo Drafthouse downtown and would like to chime in and let us know about that, give us a call, 816-235-2888, or send us a note at centralstandard@kcur.org. And we do have a few announcements I'd like to share with you. You can find out more information on all of these things at kcur.org. But first of all, as many of you know, the Kansas City Fringe Festival is taking place this week. It's actually through the 29th of July, and there are a number of films that are a part of the festivities. Of course, the Fringe Festival has to do with music, dance, theater, art, fashion, and film, and some of the film screenings include the Best of the Independent Filmmakers Coalition and Cinema KC Showcase, as well as the KC Women in Film and TV Short Film Program. These will all be at the Screenland Crown Center as part of the Fringe Festival, and you can find out more information, as I said, at kcur.org. And also, the Tivoli Cinema's Performing Arts Series returns on August 5th and 8th with the Paris Opera Ballet's performance of, I hope I pronounced this right, I'm going to give it a shot, La Badaire. It's the final work of Rudolf Nureyev, and that will be a broadcast at the Tivoli. And you can find out more information at kcur.org. And as we said, the Alamo Drafthouse Cinema has opened in the Main Street Theater location in the Power and Light District. And in addition to mainstream and art house movies, they're starting a series of special screenings like film classics and quirky movies with interesting food choices that are selected to accompany these cinematic themes. And they do a lot of special programming over there, and you can find out more information at our website as well. And finally, just like to send out a special congratulations to all our friends over at the Fine Arts Group. They're celebrating their 30th anniversary, and of course, those are the guys who run the Glenwood Arts, as well as the Glenwood at Redbridge, the Leawood, and the Rio Theaters, bringing for 30 years a lot of great cinema to the Kansas City area. Specialty programming and independent and foreign films and documentaries and things you might not be able to see otherwise. These guys have been getting it done for 30 years, and we would just give a tip of the hat and a thank you to all the guys with the Fine Arts Theater. And keep it up, guys. We really appreciate it. I wanted to let you know that somebody sent in a note about a movie that's playing at the Screenland Crossroads, one that the critics, unfortunately, we haven't had a chance to see. But it's a interesting movie called Beyond the Black Rainbow. And it says that it's only at the Crossroads this weekend. It's set in the strange and oppressive emotional landscape of the year 1983. Beyond the Black Rainbow is a Reagan-era fever dream inspired by hazy childhood memories of midnight movies and Saturday morning cartoons from the producer of Mocktail Drop. Rainbow is the outlandish feature film debut of writer-director Panos Cosmatos. It features a hypnotic analog synthesizer score by Jerry Schmidt of Sonola Caves and Black Mountain. Beyond the Black Rainbow is an experience of the senses. All right, so now you know a little bit about that movie. You know more than we knew, so there you go. That's Beyond the Black Rainbow at the Screenland Crossroads at 17th and Washington downtown, right over by the new Performing Arts Center. So let's jump back in and talk about some of the movies that have opened. I know that Marie saw one that Tom and I missed. It's the latest from Tyler Perry. It's a comedy called Madea's Witness Protection Program.
Well, the title just about says it all, but it's not Madea who goes into witness protection. It's Eugene Levy and Denise Richardson and their family. And there's a very funny beginning part of this because Levy is being framed for embezzlement. And he goes into his office and you know, people are shredding everything and he's clueless as to what's going on. And they're taping everything he says to make it look like he was the one who masterminded this. So then when he's in witness protection, you can spot these things happening a mile away. You know, the teenage daughter doesn't want to get up in the morning and Medea needs the house cleaned and so on. And so the first morning there's breakfast and it's everything is deep fried. We've got sausage and bacon and grits and everything. And Denise Richardson looks and says, or Richard, excuse me, nobody counts carbs, huh? And there are a couple of really good quips that I won't say on the air. But there's a scene there where Medea is going to New York, and she's patted down at the airport. And everybody around her, the crew and everybody, are laughing. And I think this is probably one of the outtakes that they put in the film to make it longer. And that's my objection here. This film is 2 hours and 5 minutes. It could have been a good, strong 90 minutes instead. But if you like Tyler Perry as Medea, this is another good role and plenty of humor in here, and I'll give it a 3.
I would like to just go on the record and say something about Tyler Perry films because we get some criticism, particularly at Fox 4, for not reviewing the Tyler Perry movies. That's because Tyler Perry does not allow us to see his films. He's gone on record as saying he doesn't want the critics to see the movies in advance. Some of them managed to see it. I don't know how, but... For the most part, he wants the public to make up their own judgment and doesn't allow the critics to see his movies. And to some degree, they're critic-proof. But I want everyone to know that because we've come under some criticism, people thinking it's that perhaps there's some racist motive behind the fact that we're not reviewing Tyler Perry movies. That's Tyler Perry's choice. And so sometimes it's hard for us to catch up with a movie that has opened previously when there's not a critic screening because we have so many other movies that we need to cover. So that's the reason out there. That's the reason that Tyler Perry doesn't get the critical coverage that he might otherwise get. But I appreciate you seeing that on our behalf so we can get that covered, Marie.
Thank you.
And let's talk about another one that I believe all three of us have seen completely on the other end of the cinematic spectrum. It's the latest from Oliver Stone. It's a thriller called Savages. Tom?
Yes, Savages is one of those films, if you like it, it's going to be a summer guilty pleasure. This is Oliver Stone going back to sort of his operatic, violent types of films like Natural Born Killers. A story about two young, not really dope dealers as much as dope growers, and they've got the finest sorts of seeds that they brought back. One of them had been stationed as a soldier for... multiple times in Afghanistan, and he brings back these seeds. And so they're living the good life in Laguna Beach. And boy, Laguna Beach looks beautiful in this film, where they're in a menage a trois with a young, beautiful woman. However, a drug cartel from Mexico is sort of trying to take over the territory and get their seeds and take their business. So they're going to take a corporate takeover. And one of the fun things, and this is certainly Oliver Stone sort of handiwork, the cartel really is run like a major American corporation, so there's a slight kind of critique of sort of capitalism at work in this film. The reason to see it, though, is in fact it's got three great performances by Benicio del Toro as one of the gangsters, Selma Hayek as the leader is just terrific, and then I think a great performance by John Travolta. These are the side characters, and the problem is that whenever they're on the screen, I think this film is really, really terrific fun. But when they're not on the screen and we're thrown back to particular Taylor Kitsch, who is, I think, particularly weak, he needs to be a sort of psychopathic type of killer. And I think that he just sort of stays like an all-American boy, and then he just will have a few outbursts and don't seem to make much sense. Also, and this is where you have to be very careful not to give away any spoilers, but boy, the ending of this film is a total train wreck. I left aggravated about the way that this narrative sort of falls apart at the end. So I don't know what to give it. It's got these great performances. It's terrific to look at. I had a lot of fun part of the time. It's got major errors. So despite the terrific performances, I don't think I can go above 2.5 stars.
Marie?
Well, it's adapted from a 2010 novel by Don Winslow, and I was wondering if anybody listening has read the book and has actually seen this movie then, because the movie has three stories going on. We've got the three main characters as one, you know, the threesome. And then the second one is Blake Lively, who's the girl, Ophelia, called O, who is kidnapped. And then her story in captivity, the things that she has to go through there. And then the third one are the double crosses, the triple crosses, and everything else between Elena, which is Selma Hayek, and Benicio del Toro, her right-hand man, and John Travolta, who's a DEA agent, as to who's double-crossing who. And, you know, you just think you've got everything figured out, and bingo, something else happens in there. And not to mention the ending. And I was really disappointed because I thought this film could be better than what it was. And I feel sorry for a Taylor Kitsch because he had Battleship behind him and John Carter, both films of which I liked and which didn't do good at the box office. And now he's in Savages, and the script is not doing him justice at all. So I'm barely going to squeak out a 2 rating.
You know, I thought this was a pretty taut thriller and fairly well made. But I'm with you, Tom. The ending was just a complete cop-out. He wanted to have it both ways. I don't think I'm giving too much away to say that the ending is a cop-out. So, unfortunately, I can't give it more than a 2.5 myself. So let's go ahead and make it a 2.5 for Savages, and that's rated R, and by golly, it earns that R rating because this is a lurid and violent movie.
You know, what's a shame is with some recasting of the sort of major protagonist, and, in fact, a rewrite. In many ways, this could have been a really terrific, terrific film, yeah. And it's not.
We talked earlier about Ted, a very funny, raunchy movie. And speaking of Ted, we have Ted on the line from Kansas City who wants to chime in. Hi, Ted.
Hi, guys. I really enjoy this segment that you do on Friday. And
thank you.
Very, very interesting. You know, I was listening when you talked about Ted a little while ago. I went to see it with my wife on Monday night, and I laughed. I had belly laughed. I thought it was really, really funny and actually quite touching towards the end. I was almost tearing up. They really get into the characters, and who doesn't want to look at those eyes on Mila Kunis? And my God. But the thing I wanted to make reference to was what you guys are talking about in the R rating, and you kept bringing up language and dirty words. And I'm often fascinated by R ratings because actions, to me, speak much louder than words. Terribly violent films don't get R ratings. And you guys never mentioned there was simulated intercourse. You seem to have a problem with the language, but not the actions. I would never take a kid to that. Maybe, you know, 15, 16 years old, but a little younger than that, a little bit over the top, and don't even know if they'd enjoy it as much. But I'd like to get off the phone and let you guys reference what I said about you're being more centered on the language than the actual actions.
I'll make a comment about that because I actually agree with the caller. I think that, in fact, we end up being way too much attention to just sort of words outside of the context. I think in this film, though, that the dirty language is, in fact, because the character, in fact, is a real sort of sleaze, and so it's a question about at what age is appropriate for the plot. The other example, though, is the sweetest film I think that has come out in years and years and years was the Irish film Once. And then it was given, in fact, this R rating for language. And it's a film that, in fact, I think any younger person could go and love. So I thought that's the problem of just picking out words and fitting ratings without the context of what's the feel of the movie.
Yeah, it's actually like people, when they're making comments about movies, don't address that these words are commonly used every day, and I'm sure you guys have used some of them yourself.
Not me. Hey, thanks, Ted. Really appreciate your input.
You got it. Thank you.
We talked earlier about a movie called Savages, and Marie asked if someone had read the book, and Bill, you've read the book. Bill from Kansas City.
I haven't seen the movie, so I can contribute nothing there, but I liked the book mainly because Winslow's job with dialogue is just awesome. It's sort of reminds me of Elmore Leonard in that respect. I mean, it's just great dialogue. And I had a problem with the ending of the book because I have a question about it. But I don't know if it would resolve it if I saw the movie or not. But I gave the book 8 out of 10 rating.
All right. Well, thank
you.
You know,
thank you.
The thing about the ending of the film is that you get basically two choices, and you get to choose which ending you prefer, basically.
Oh, God. Okay.
So that's what we mean by a cop-out ending.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I would agree.
All right. Thanks a lot, Bill. Thanks for your call. And Dave was going to talk about a couple of movies we were just getting ready to talk about. Dave from Raytown with Moonrise Kingdom and People Like Us. Hi, Dave.
Hello. Great show.
Thank you.
Oftentimes on the summer venues, most of the press is centered on the big blockbusters, but there are oftentimes a lot of really nice sleepers that kind of creep in and out of the newspaper that a lot of people tend to overlook. And I just wanted to bring up just a couple.
Yeah.
Moonrise Kingdom, I thought, was absolutely wonderful. Of course, it has a stellar cast. There's a new star in that, Kara Hayward, that seems to be making quite an impression on a number of people. And she's the young starlet that's in the movie. The movie itself is quirky and, of course, set back in the early 60s, and I grew up at that time, and it felt like I had just stepped into a time machine. It was wonderful and odd and surprisingly engaging. You really kind of enjoyed the movie from start to end, didn't know where it was going. So I liked that one. Another one is People Like Us, which I didn't think got enough promotion, and I think the chemistry between Chris Pine and Elizabeth Banks is absolutely wonderful. Good acting, and even though they are brother and sister, only one of them knows that, and it's that wonderful kind of where is this going also. Again, it's not a predictable movie, and I like those. And again, kind of overlooked, it's something somebody, you know, looking for something to do should try and catch. I thought it was a good movie. And the last one is kind of odd and quirky, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's Safety Not Guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, again, kind of a left field type of movie, low budget, as you can tell. But there's this a young lady in there that really kind of mesmerizes me as far as watching the movie. And I like to kind of be enveloped with the story, in particular, though, enhanced with the performances. And her name was Aubrey Plaza. And, again, just wonderful to watch. Don't know where it's going. Very quirky, but an engaging kind of movie. And, again, those are my three picks for sleepers as far as the summer is concerned.
Thanks so much, Dave. Appreciate your call. Moonrise Kingdom and People Like Us are still playing. Unfortunately, Safety Not Guaranteed is no longer playing in the Kansas City area. We did have Stella, who wrote us on Facebook, who said, I saw Beyond the Black Rainbow at Crossroads, kind of like Drive. The movie rests on long stares into the camera by beautiful people while extremely loud hipster music blasts in the background for most of the movie. That being said, I did enjoy both Drive and Beyond the Black Rainbow, but it's not for anyone looking for a deep or eventful story. So thank you for chiming in on that, Stella. And while we're talking about People Like Us, I'll just cover that really quickly. I thought it was a good Hollywood soap opera, particularly well written, good cast. It's not a great movie by any stretch of the imagination, but it's an entertaining one for people that like stories that are low-key and about human relationships. Yeah, yes, this one might work for you. Chris Pine is a really slick salesperson who finds out that he has a family he didn't know anything about when his father dies. He looks up his sister that he doesn't know about and doesn't want to tell her that he's her brother because he's thinking about keeping the inheritance for himself. And he wants to get to know this family a little bit better before he decides what to do. Well, of course, there are complications when his sister falls for him. So it is soapy. Michelle Pfeiffer has a nice turn as Chris Pine's mom. As far as Hollywood soap operas are concerned, I thought it was pretty good. So I'll give it a 3.5 for People Like Us, rated PG-13. And Moonrise Kingdom, let's talk about that. Wes Anderson is a very quirky filmmaker. You know, this is a likably whimsical comedy about 12-year-old runaways in 2005. The kids are quite good, but Bill Murray, Frances McDormand, Bruce Willis, and Ed Norton are a lot of fun as the clueless adults. The kids are cute, you know, and this tongue-in-cheek approach and deadpan dialogue that is a characteristic of Wes Anderson movies does not appeal to everyone. Some people just think it's too much. You know, it just depends on your point of view. But, you know, it's nice for those who have an appreciation for the offbeat. So, I'm going to give it a 4. How about you, Tom?
If you were ever 12 years old, go see this movie and sort of relive the magic world that you live in. I think this is like a fairy tale for adults. I found it immensely entertaining. I do like Wes Anderson's sense of whimsy. It's kind of a Peter Pan story. But I think that Bruce Willis is really super good. Ed Norton is terrific. So I think that the performances are strong, and I'm going to give it 3.5 stars.
Okay, so we'll call it that 3.5 for Moonrise Kingdom, rated PG-13. On Twitter, Justin writes that he agrees with our choice to rename The Amazing Spider-Man The Average Spider-Man. Great action pieces and a strong cast, but the film lacks the heart and relationships that made Raimi's first two click. And we got an email from Denny who says, after the up-to-date shows recounting Woody Allen's career, I wanted to see his latest contribution. My wife and I went to the Plaza Cinemark and only paid $4. We overpaid. We Ooh. Both couldn't wait for it to end. I forced laughter 4 times trying to convince myself that I would enjoy this. I actually laughed once. I saw someone rated at 1.5 stars, and it is at least 1 star too high. And Jeff on Twitter writes, Moonrise Kingdom was amazing. I was not around in the 60s, but was taken back to my youth by the poignant characters and story. Okay, thanks all of you for your contributions. And let's go back a step and talk about the Woody Allen movie, which is called To Rome with Love. Tom?
From early in Woody Allen's career, location has oftentimes been sort of the major character. Think of Manhattan and such. And now, late in his career, he's kind of gotten out of black and white Manhattan and been traveling to a film with London, and then to Paris and Midnight in Paris, and now he's in love with Rome. This is, I found, terribly uneven, so I can't disagree with the caller. It's separate stories, which are just sort of intertwined, but they never interconnect. So the thing that holds everything together is just Rome itself. I enjoyed it a bit more than The Caller because I think that one of the stories with Ellen Page and Jesse Eisenberg and Alec Baldwin would make a really good short film. Otherwise, the other two are just farce and not particularly entertaining. So I'm going to give it 2.5 stars because of the center performance of Ellen Page and Jesse Eisenberg. That narrative I thought was really good.
I think maybe I'll fall in between you and The Caller. I do think this is Woody Allen's weakest comedy, probably maybe of his career. It's too bad following on the heels of Midnight in Paris, which is his biggest box office hit of his career, that he would kind of fall back into formula. And this is a very formulaic script from him. It's the stories are completely disconnected. So, I'm only going to be able to give it a 2. So we'll say 2.5 just because I like the cast for To Rome with Love, rated R. Did you have something else you wanted to add there, Tom?
Oh, just if you actually are a Woody Allen fan and want to read a really good review, I was surprised that The New Yorker just raved that it's one of his greatest accomplishments.
Let's talk about a couple of films we both liked a lot more. One is Beasts of the Southern Wild.
Yes, Beasts of the Southern Wild, I think, is a remarkable movie that is by a first-time filmmaker that sort of developed this through the Sundance program of developing scripts and movies shot on 16mm. It all takes place in Louisiana and, in fact, is a part of the Delta where it's really isolated because of the levees that have been built. And it's about a small girl and this little community of outcasts. Her name is Hush Puppy. They live in an area called the Bathtub, which because of global warming is going to be ultimately flooded. So this is an apocalyptic, very dark kind of fairy tale movie. So many of the films we've been talking about are either mythic or just sort of fairy tales. But the performances are terrific. I think the film looks great. It really has a feeling of magic realism for sure. it's so authentic, and it's all a non-professional cast, the folks that they just found in the region. But, you know, they're so authentic that I could have used subtitles.
Mm-hmm. How about a rating?
I'm going to give it, though, I'm going to go ahead and give it 4 stars.
You know, I wanted to like this movie more than I did. Thought it was exceptionally well made, had some brilliant moments, but it was pretentious and overreaching to some degree as well. So I'm only going to be able to go to 3.5. So what do you say, 3.5 for Beasts of the Southern
yep.
Wild? Okay. And Headhunters, Tom, a great, terrific thriller.
Yes, this is a film from Norway, and it's about a person that's a headhunter for a corporation, but on the sideline, how he makes his money, because he's got a very expensive wife that likes money, is that he is an art thief, but he steals from the wrong man and gets in big trouble. It's stylish. The acting is great. Go see it.
So and I agree.
It's a double play on words, because yes. It's not cannibalism. It's
no.
It's
right.
Business and headhunters.
Yes, and this is a movie that if you liked Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, you will like this movie. So I'm giving it a 4. That's 4 for Headhunters rated R.
And before we have to go away, can I just throw in, go see Magic Mike. I
oh,
think
yes.
It's a terrific, terrific movie.
I like it,
I can't
too.
Agree. Join Jabaloni LaFall and the Computer Guys on Central Standard Monday for an hour looking at the strangest things your apps and software have asked you permission for. Our show is produced by Andrea Salenzi. Our announcer is Kim Noble. And many thanks to my fellow movie critics today. I'm Russ Simmons, and this is Central Standard Friday. Enjoy your day.